Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. We're not going to really mess about discussing a whole lot of the formalities of introduction. I'm Spencer Hall from Everyday Should Be Saturday and SBNation.com. Joining me, Jason Kirk. He's the guy with the crickets, the lord of the night insects. Say hello, Jason.
Hello, and say hello to my minions.
Speak, my angels.
Sing!
Madness has overtaken all of us in week six. He's our college football editor at SB Nation, by the way. He has a job. Also has a job, ladies. Ryan Nanny joining us from Brooklyn.
I'm Fortune Magazine.
He is Fortune Magazine. Everything you read published in Fortune Magazine comes
all
from,
by me.
Comes from that man's gifted, nimble hands. He's typing right now, but still joining us for a lowly college football podcast. Like I said, we're not going to mess around because week six was, this is when the season started. It started on Thursday night when Oregon lost to Arizona, to Rich Rodriguez, the unheralded rogue coach nobody's ever hired for a big job, just sitting out there in the desert like a vein of copper or a rogue Aztec diamond, just floating out there all by himself, just waiting for some large program, like, I don't know, maybe Michigan, to take him. It rolled on through Friday when Taysom Hill was injured and BYU's playoff hopes. Ryan, where did they go to live?
To their own planet in the celestial heavens.
It's a pretty good planet. Mm-hmm. And by the way, tore like everything.
Holiday Bulgia.
Holiday Bulgia. Out there somewhere in beautiful Mormon celestial heaven. Don't make fun of Mormon heaven. It's a really good deal compared to other heavens. Even if you get a crappy one, it's like, it's still probably pretty good.
I'm still by myself. It's an improvement.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I've seen pictures of Provo. If there's a whole planet that looks like that, I'm going.
Exactly. I'm saying, you know, I could live. If the planet looks like that, I can probably make it without caffeine. I'm saying. Games that amazed you, I think we each have one to discuss that we watched, devoted ourselves to, and were utterly shocked by. And I don't want to start with the big obvious one, so I want to go to Ryan first. The first one being you watched Oklahoma TCU, which was a stunning result given everything Oklahoma had coming in, yes?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because TCU jumped out to a big lead, and then like Oklahoma chipped away. TCU jumped out to another small lead. Oklahoma chipped away. And then Oklahoma took the lead early in the third quarter, and you were like, okay, I've seen how this works. And then TCU's defense got mean, like super mean and nasty, and just like, you know, Big Game Bob is a fun thing to throw around, but this wasn't like, oh, you know, Oklahoma got massively outcoached. No, they just kind of got their ass beat for the last 25 minutes of the game or so, and that was weird to see.
And by the way, I think that's a theme that will probably echo through all of the games that we discuss. There wasn't a whole lot of, oh, then we had the game stolen from us by the officials, except for maybe you, Oregon. You had other problems.
They had a lot of other problems.
That offensive line is a sieve. But most of these games, if you looked at them, these were pretty decisive. They were not really, like, you looked at them and they made sense. You know, like TCU toward the end of that game, if you look at that fourth quarter box score, it makes sense. They are kicking Oklahoma's ass.
Yeah, they totally earned it. And I don't know, it's not like a death knell for Oklahoma and not something we walk away saying, oh, you know, they're overrated and they don't deserve anything as usual. But damn, like TCU looked really, really good on defense. And that was fun to see in a conference where that is often lacking in recent years.
Well, you
preach,
you know. Well,
preach.
Jason, being fond of Cro-Magnon football, will of course preach.
But they also played a little offense. Like Trevon Boykin threw for 300 yards, and like you know, they didn't have to just beat Oklahoma with a rock. Although they did do that.
They have a rock to beat them with.
It is a rock, and it is for beating.
Yeah, and defensively, if you can, of course, play some defense in the Big 12 and do it really well, you're automatically better than, like, all but three teams in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, provided you have an offense. Provided you don't play the, like, Iowa State game if you're like, ha-ha, we have a defense and zero offense.
And the refs hate us.
And our AD, in case there wasn't enough craziness, Jamie Pollard, the athletic director of Iowa State, goes on a post-game tirade that cost him $25,000, claiming that there is a conspiracy against Iowa State, to which I argue a conspiracy requires energy, organization, two things pretty much lacking in like the same place. You don't find that in the same place in college football. And it would require a real dislike and knowledge of what Iowa State is, which only Iowa has.
But it does, Iowa State is a petty enough target that it does sort of fit Big 12 country. Like, that's where you hate somebody for no reason who already has nothing.
How can you hate a town whose, like, chief claim to fame is having clean water?
Some clean water. They were very clear that it was not all of the water.
You know what that clean water ain't? It ain't oil.
That's true. You can't drink that, can you? Huh?
It's a really strong point.
It flows right out of the faucets in Texas and Oklahoma. Them Iowans getting all snooty with their water. My baby's been drinking oil for 8 years. Strongest child in his preschool.
An eight-year-old in preschool?
Well, in Texas you do.
I mean, the kid drinks oil, Ryan.
Kid drinks oil. We're just growing. We're red shirting him for life. Just gonna get him big and set him loose.
The state of Texas, where we red shirt you for life.
These are his mission years. So
my car runs on oil. Why can't my son, Jason, the game that you have picked as your sort of stunning upset game? You believe you have Mississippi State, Texas A&M.
This is the game that we settled on. I don't know how shocking and all that it was, but definitely a larger margin in the early in the fourth quarter than anyone would have predicted. Mississippi State up 31 points early in the fourth, partially due to some weird turnovery stuff. There was sort of a tipped interception, and Texas A&M ended up with 526 yards and all that. So I don't know if this one was quite as impressive as either the 48-17 margin or the final margin suggest, but still a convincing hands-down blowout of a team that everyone coming into the year and through 5 weeks, thought was a very good Texas A&M team, and probably still is. Just wasn't their day against a very good Mississippi State front seven. You know, against an offense that's going to be able to run the ball on anybody. Probably just a really bad matchup for Texas A&M. I think a lot of people are higher on Mississippi State at this point than I am, but still, you know, nothing you can take away from this win that isn't, damn, that's a good football team.
Yeah, I think that was the shocking thing, was that how well-rounded a defeat it was delivered to A&M, right? It wasn't just, you know, like with the Arkansas game, it was pretty obvious that Arkansas was just really good at leaning on them, right? And that they were just going to drag out the game and run on them and take it into the fourth quarter. And I think how thorough this was kind of shocking to me, particularly on the pressure side. Because, you know, they got three INTs off Kenny Hill. You know, he's had some pressure and he's had some erratic play before, but this was a totally consistent, like, frizzle fry of Kenny Hill's quarterbacking nervous system for basically the second half.
It did not help that Kenny Hill's receivers dropped, like, a lot of good passes.
That's another thing. There were about 9 or 10 drops that MSU did very little to force. If they play this game 5 more times, it's a whole lot closer. But still, I don't think even if you give them, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 of those completions, Mississippi State still walks away with it. But
also, I think the big element that changes things for Mississippi State offensively,
Little Caesar's mascot,
and Josh Robinson, who I trust as a running back because he's got a big butt. He's got the Michael Turner going back there. He's basically this, like, bowling ball shaped running back, and I trust any running back who I suspect has, like, a density somewhere around molten copper, and that's Josh Robinson.
Well, got to be careful, state of Mississippi. If you're molten copper, somebody might steal you and sell you.
This might just strip you out of the Mississippi State roster, sell you on the market. Let's go ahead and go to the last game I want to mention, which is the tragedy of Connor Halliday.
Oh.
If you want to, there were a lot of painful, odd things that happened this weekend, one of which being Ole Miss Bama, which we are going to talk about that. I just want to reserve a note before we do that to just say that a quarterback this weekend managed to throw for more yards than any quarterback in the history of college football and lost his game.
Serves him right.
You know, he threw for more yards in that game than 11 teams have thrown for all year.
Yeah.
And not even like, yeah, like, fine, Georgia Tech is on that list, Air Force is on that list. Like, actual teams, UCF is on that list.
Yeah, and by the way, in this game, went 49 for 70.
Typical.
Did not throw a pick.
Neither did Jared Goff, though.
I think all defensive backs were basically playing with ping pong paddles strapped to their hands. There was absolutely no danger whatsoever of anyone intercepting a pass at all.
They didn't even get the good ping pong paddles. They got the one with the stripping all ripped off.
But sometime around 2:45 a.m. Eastern time, they missed a field goal and lost this game. And I'm so very sorry, Connor Halliday. You have now exceeded Nick Foles for the Connor Halliday in a Losing Effort Award.
I mean, what is there to take away from this utter nonsense? Like, what do we learn from this? Both teams are horrible. Like, there's no hope, no wisdom, nothing. This is a total.
You're just mad because you're going to lose a bet.
Yeah, you're mad because Cal's going to make you look bad because Cal is on they're on the other end of the spectrum. Go ahead, the bet.
Well, Stephen Godfrey and I bet back in like May that Cal would not win four. I bet Stephen that Cal would not win four games this year. They have done so. the arrangement was fried chicken was on the line because we're both from the South. This is the only currency we know. Cal has proved me wrong, so way to go, Cal. I get to eat fried chicken now. Look who's the real winner here.
No. It goes farther than that. Where is Cal in the Pac-12 standings right now?
Well, they lead the Pac-12 North. Hey, that's not my fault.
Kings of the Pac-12 North. All California is bizarro Will Muschamp football. They're just on the other end of the spectrum. You're going to watch it. You're going to be horrified. And at the end, covered in blood and victorious and alone and maybe missing an arm, will be Sonny Dykes.
Cal is what everybody accused Baylor of being for a couple years.
Oh,
like yeah. We everybody thought Baylor couldn't play defense. This is Cal.
You had no idea.
No. You were mistaken. There is another.
Turns out Baylor was only kind of bad at defense before it got good.
It's like when you had scary rap as a kid and you're like, oh my gosh, like the Ghetto Boys kind of scare me. And then DMX came along and his album cover was him covered in blood. You're like,
oh no, it's that Wu-Tang side project about like eating people. Yeah, okay, this is scarier than Two Live Crew.
That's so dirty, Two Live Crew. Yeah, this is Cool Keith's Sex Style. Why don't you listen to that? Wrap your ears around that. Oh, Baylor's so bad. Oh, wait till you hear Wazoo.
Just compared Baylor to Two Live Crew.
I did.
I think this means Cal ends up impersonating an FBI agent like 5 years from now.
Yes, I can see that. Can't you see? Come on, Sonny Dykes. That's a name that's just like born to testify in federal court.
So you're trying to get me. You're trying. You want me to believe that Tony Franklin is going to impersonate a government agent? Man.
Ain't no other cat's got love for me.
He already looks like an undercover cop. Come on, he kind of does.
Yeah, that old coaching staff kind of does.
They all do. That's Cal under the Cal.
Hey man, we play real cool football. Don't worry about that defense. Just come on in and throw the ball, man.
Did you guys hook me up with some MJ? Maybe a little bit of that horse. I heard that's on the streets.
We throw around the drugs ball.
Just the holes.
Come on in and score a whole bunch of drugs in the end zone.
Just Cal, yeah. Cal football, a whole staff full of narcs.
In too deep.
That's why Tuberville kicked him off the staff at Auburn. Tuberville knows a snitch.
That's right.
Finally, to go to the discussion of, I think, the game everyone expects you to talk about this week, which is good, because it really was, I think, exciting, if not totally shocking. In hindsight, that would be Ole Miss beating Alabama, which, going back and rewatching it, I was sort of stunned at how short they kept things for Blake Sims after the Florida game plan. Like, they did take shots downfield, but it was nothing like what they were able to do against Florida, or what they tried to do against Florida. It was really kind of looked a lot like the USC stuff that Lane Kiffin kind of, I think, got choked out on in LA, like a lot of like short little rollouty. They were pretty conservative with him at times, and that sort of surprised me.
I think they were terrified that if they let him sit in the pocket too long, he was going to get killed.
A legitimate concern,
right? Because against Florida, they had all kinds of time in the pocket, but that was not true against Ole Miss.
And if you rewatch, there's multiple moments where Blake Sims gets pressured and just starts scooting around, and something really dumb happens. Like there's one point where he just scrambles out of bounds and loses 5 yards, and they miss a field goal. Of course, it's Bama, so they would have missed it.
Misfortune.
One second.
It made it easier. It made it more likely to be returned for a touchdown, which it wasn't, but.
But yeah, I think the lesson, like when I came away from it, what made sense to me was, oh, Ole Miss's defense is awesome. And they were actually able to really screw up a lot of the only thing Alabama could do consistently was run with TJ Yeldon. TJ Yeldon still had over 100 yards. Derrick Henry was pretty bottled up, and Sims, they really limited what Sims could do. Amari Cooper still got catches. I mean, he was pretty well defended, and Cooper still had, he still caught the ball 9 times. Didn't quite have 100 yards. Didn't have a TD at all. And
Bama earned 10 offensive points.
10. Three in the second half.
Lane Kiffin.
10.
Lane Kiffin. Lane
Kiffin. I mean, even adjusting for the Kiffin factor, I think Ole Miss's defense is the best unit in the country right now. Yeah. It just looks like, I mean, it looks like you're watching like Missile Command or something, and just shit's coming down at you. You know, they drop everybody back to, you know, they take away the pass, and then they just rally so fast and so hard, and they hit like hell.
The other thing I was shocked at was how many three-man rushes. They got pressure with three and four men a lot. There were not a whole lot of blitzes going on. Not a lot at all. And the best part was watching Robert Condici, because if you watch Robert Condici, number five, playing on the interior for them, either on the nose or working as one of the D-tackles when they have a four-man front, when they do that, Condici does not pursue the ball carrier at all. He just pushes his man as far into the backfield as possible every play. It's hilarious. His mission is to just disrupt.
He's the Zuckerberg defense.
He's just the venture capital tackle. They just disrupt. Just push him as far. Like, there are so many times when Sims had to scramble. Like, oh shit! Like tree falling. Like that's it. He's not even
here. Comes 600 pounds. I better move.
Like, Condici is still young and raw enough that like he hasn't figured out that, oh, now I'll get the ball and dominate move. No, he's just beating this man's ass in front of him
and still playing a new position. This is a defensive end / running back in high school who played mostly that his freshman year. They slid him inside the defensive tackle, and his job is just be a monster.
Yeah, there is a play where he backs Ari Quanjo up. Okay, like he ends up matched up on Ari Quanjo. And he backs him up, and Ari Quanjo, he bends Ari Quanjo, right? Like 320, right? Bends Ari Quanjo in half, basically, backwards. And it's the most amazing play because, one, Condici bends a man in half, and two, Ari Quanjo is strong enough and flexible enough to just have that happen and sort of snap back after play like, oh, that's funny, that can happen. Okay, cool. It's astonishing. So, yay, Ole Miss's defense, and Bo Wallace didn't turn the ball over. Yay, there's your whole game right there.
Yeah,
I guarantee you one of those things cannot last all season.
Which one, Ryan?
Come on, don't make me say bad things about Dr. Bo.
Dr. Bo's going to throw his picks. But
he's the only dad I ever had.
Man, can Dr. Bo live? Let the man express himself with a pick every now and then.
No, under the terms of that settlement, he cannot live.
I also did laugh because one of the first plays in the game was a design quarterback run for Dr. Bo. Like, wake him up with a hit. Like, that was the first thing they did was throw 175 pounds of pure Mississippi, like, courage right into the teeth of the Alabama defense.
Tyler Durden style. Punch me as hard as you can.
That's just a little anesthesia.
Just getting the doctor loosened up, you know?
You're numb now, ain't you?
He's been around the ether so much he can't operate without a little bit of it in his snoot.
Good shit.
That and he threw beautiful passes when they need to. They throw like one of the better back, like the Laquon Treadwell, they throw one of the better little back shoulder fades.
Yeah.
That little back shoulder throw. Oh. They're good at that.
It's funny that bullshit works when you have like a 6'5", five star to throw it to. Everybody else in the country does that nonsense to, you know,
hey,
just
you're
an average little wide receiver.
You're 5'8". You played quarterback in high school. You go get this pass.
Yeah. Sure, that'll work.
You just have to use the Scott Schaefer of Syracuse model. You just have to want it more. People out here cutting heads off.
You said Scott Schaefer. That made me laugh.
I did. Soft-nosed ass coach. Let's move on to there's a thing we sort of wanted to do. We were trying to figure out what we wanted Jason to read in this particular voice, because it turns out Jason does I think what is a not just a passable but an excellent Wright Thompson imitation. So in honor of Wright Thompson, the recently departed from Twitter Wright Thompson, we wanted to honor Ole Miss's victory by having him read something which was extremely inappropriate for Wright Thompson to read. So what is your selection, Jason, that you're going to be reading?
I'm going to be reading an article entitled "Heirloom Popcorn Helps a Snack Reinvent Itself" from the New York Times.
Because when you think Wright Thompson and Ole Miss, don't you think the bleached, parboiled, bland prose of the aliens who write the New York Times? Jason, whenever you're ready.
Shellsburg, Iowa. Corn confronts you at every turn in Iowa. It blurs past the car window for hours. Stop for gas, and you're likely to find a patch growing out back. Much of it will fuel cars, feed cattle, and sweeten food. But a half hour's drive from Cedar Rapids in front of Gene and Lynn Mealhouse's sturdy farmhouse, ears of corn no bigger than a child's hand grow from seeds the family can trace back to the 1850s. The small, pearly flint corn has never been genetically modified or hybridized. Its only purpose is to pop into small, crisp puffs that taste of pure toasted corn. Mr. Mealhouse, 59, a soil expert who still looks very much like the hippie drummer he once was, spent years driving around trying to sell his precious popcorn. Now, his tiny but mighty brand is on the shelves of Whole Foods.
Stop with Whole Foods. That's great. Oh, so congratulations, y'all. Hottie toddy.
I look forward to somebody isolating just Whole Foods.
Whole for puffs.
What is your text alert message? Oh, it's Jason saying Whole Foods is Wright Thompson.
No one will understand this joke. Ever.
That's it. We just ruined the whole show. Yay. Don't know why that happened.
Oh, well, with that, I think that's we'll do that again because I like listening to Jason cough afterwards. He's kind of, you said he's kind of got a little Undertaker in there. Can you hear me?
Hello?
I can hear you still.
Okay, Jason, can you hear me?
Hey, I can hear you now.
Okay, cool. That's at 33:23. We'll take that out.
Leave it.
Leave it. But you say there's a little bit of Undertaker in there, right?
Yeah, it's either Undertaker or Bray Wyatt, sort of that plus Cookie Monster. I don't think I have it down at all, but it's a work in progress.
Yeah, it's coming along. It's close enough to, you know, make me snort. So we'll do that again. Because I do enjoy listening to you strain and say the word puffs. Puffs.
It's a good word.
Reader mail time. Reader mail. Ba-ba-da-ba. And by mail, we mean tweets. Let's start off with... I want to start off with a bang. I want to start off with my own, which is from Telco Ag on Twitter, which is, if Arkansas wins an SEC game, what food will Brett Bielema eat off of his wife? I'm going to guess chili. Just ladle it right on there.
It's turkey chili, though, because he's trying to eat right.
Well, you know, it's...
In what universe is Brett Bielema trying to eat right?
I'm convinced he wears those giant, like, tent coats on the sideline because that's his method of losing weight.
Sweat it off?
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys whose, like, entire workout regimen is centered around sweating, you know?
Oh, like, so he's being, like, a high school wrestler.
Yeah, he's either, yeah. Like, he's probably got one of those machines that just jiggles fat, you know, with a belt.
It's like, I lose 3 pounds at the end of every game. Must be working.
Why are you chewing Starburst and spitting all day?
gotta keep the jaw working.
Gotta make weight.
Gotta make weight. Hold on. I'm gonna wrap myself in this trash bag.
Now you've turned him into Missy Elliott. So,
yeah. Which, yeah, if he is truly freaky, so I'm just gonna accept that. Yeah, chili. It's the chili. That's his choice. It's turkey chili.
Is great answer.
Yeah, because it's just hot enough to make it a little erotic, and not too hot enough to make it a medical
situation.
Well,
we're also talking about a Wisconsin man here, so let's not overlook like baseball park nacho cheese.
Oh no! There's a lot of nacho cheese in chili.
No, the cheese goes on top. It's sprinkled.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. As long as chili includes everything that chili could possibly entail,
Sour cream.
I'm good here.
It could also it could also be a marker, because I suspect
a birthday cake.
In Brett Bielema's house, several things might have chili poured on it. You're going to want to mark which one you're eating.
That's my chili toothpaste. Don't use it.
Exactly. I spilled chili on the rug, so to clean it, I just poured more chili on there.
Hotter chili.
Just hotter chili.
to melt the old chili.
And some beer. The bubbles sort of get it out of there.
Those tiny dogs, all they eat is chili.
Those dogs should be a lot bigger than they are.
I think they just eat like a teaspoon of chili per day.
I'm glad we got reader mail off to a smashing start. Jason, your question.
This one comes to us from our friend Burrito Bros Shits, who says... That's his name.
I know, but now I picture you saying it like Wright Thompson.
Burrito Bros Shits. Which current NFL coach would make you most angry if he replaces Muschamp? Can't say Jack Del Rio. Personally, since I'm not a Florida fan, I'd say Chip Kelly, just because that would make it even less likely that the Falcons get him. But I'll turn this over to you guys.
Jim Caldwell.
Oh, the fury.
Damn.
That's so easy. It's so Jim Caldwell. Like, Jim Caldwell has ruined a pretty entertaining Detroit Lions offense. Jim Caldwell with the dregs of Florida. My God. They'd punt on zeroth down. They would punt on downs that don't even exist yet.
Punt on kickoffs.
Like, what are you doing?
He fails the kickoff and he's punted it.
Is he really the Lions head coach?
Yeah, somehow.
To be fair, I had to do the same thing when I heard it. And somebody goes, yeah, well, they're 3-1. And I'm like, not for long.
That was also their out-of-conference record when he was going 3-10 at Wake.
Yeah. You're like, 3-1 early. I'm feeling optimistic. Okay, buddy. You go ahead and do that. My answer for who would infuriate me the most, if we're talking a currently employed head coach, Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
God damn. That would be profoundly upsetting to me.
That would make Brian Auburn targeted for a while.
Yeah, he was constantly like, maybe USC is going to hire Jeff Fisher, and I'm like, that's cool. Why don't you drink a big old glass of cancer?
Yeah, That'd be great. But Auburn thought about hiring Jeff Fisher instead of Gus Malzahn. That's true. It's true.
Not,
no,
it's not too late.
there was interest. My second on that would be if they hired like some giant lump of awful like Tony Sperano.
Oh, who is a head coach again? Thanks, Raiders. God damn it.
We only have so much time to use his name, though.
Yeah.
What I understand. going. Right?
Ryan, your question?
This question comes from Michael Wood. His question is, whose voice makes them sound dumbest? Will Muschamp, Brady Hoke, or Paul Johnson? As someone who gets a lot of comments about his voice and what it does and doesn't sound like, I'm going to say Brady Hoke, because Will Muschamp and Paul Johnson don't necessarily have dumb voices. They just say, you know, dumb or uncaring things. But Brady Hoke could read the same thing Jason read in Wright Thompson's voice, and you would think it was the dumbest thing you've ever heard.
So we went Brady Hoke doing Wright Thompson?
Brady Hoke doing Wright Thompson reading the New York Times.
My face hurts.
No, don't. You'll pull something.
I'm gonna go Brady Hoke there too. I mean, Muschamp just sounds like he's playing the character of Will Muschamp. I think he's in on the gag.
Tremendous.
And Paul Johnson doesn't sound dumb at all. He's kind of transcends intelligence.
Corn has tremendous puffs.
Yeah. Hoke is really the other two aren't close, because Paul Johnson just sounds mean.
Right.
Like, his voice is just laced with a lack of concern for all life, insect, human, pick an animal. He's probably down on microbes. Whatever.
Yeah, and he speaks with such confidence. If you've ever listened to his radio show with Wes Durham on 790 The Zone. I don't think Wes Durham still does that show. But, I mean, if you ever hear him speak, he speaks with such confidence, even if his team is like 3-5 in the ACC or whatever. There's no way that can come across as a lack of intelligence.
Yeah, like, honestly, like Paul Johnson is that like Marine sergeant in World War One who's like, there's an artillery shell 3 inches from his head about to hit him, and he's like, "We're going to get out of this. I got it.
Steel's a fad. We're going to go back to wood for all our construction one day."
And you kind of believe him, and not just because it would cost you $7 million to leave the submarine on your own.
But Brady Hoke, like, even when he has prep time, God damn, dude sounds like he has just been asked to do calculus.
Well, and also, the things Muschamp says that come across as dumb, like, I don't speak Italian. You know, it's, well, of course you don't. Who does? Why would anyone? I don't either. Who am I to judge? I've never been to Paris. I haven't either.
Take that, Tom Fornelli.
Brady Hoke, it's like, I think brains belong in skulls, usually.
It's the lack of certainty. At least with Muschamp, occasionally he'll say something where it's all too apparent he's just a football robot, right?
Do you think Brady Hoke can tell a joke, like, all the way through that has a setup and a punchline and everything?
No. He is right now.
Hey! It's a 4-month-long joke.
It's hilarious.
It's amazing. Well, I'll see if I can get him to tell a joke this weekend. How's that?
Ooh,
when I go to Ann Arbor. Yay.
Humble brag.
Humble.
Yeah. That is extremely humble.
That is a modest brag.
It's so humble, I can't spot the brag just yet.
Yeah. It's like the Brady Hoke plan. It'll surface over 2 to 3 years. It'll just emerge.
We're in our chrysalis stage right now. We're going to emerge as a dead butterfly.
That's the worst part about having a bad coach, is that you're like, oh, this is the chrysalis stage, and it comes out and it's just more chrysalis.
That's dead chrysalis.
It's just a moth. Just a horrible, horrible moth.
Stole your clothes!
I'm going to go to my question from David Hutchins, at David Hutchins on Twitter. Is Larry Blakeney resigning to take the Michigan job? Yes, yes.
You can't prove he isn't. He is quite seasoned, a thing they appreciate up there.
Mm-hmm.
Literally seasoned. He is covered in Lowry's salt.
There are some obstacles. For those of you who don't know, by the way, Troy is, yes, an FBS program. It's like Shadow Auburn. It's just down the road from Auburn, like 15 miles or something. It's not even that far. It's basically Auburn.
It's on the campus.
It's like, yeah, it's like Aldi Auburn. It's just your knockoff brand Auburn. And Larry Blakeney was their longtime coach, second longest tenured coach, I believe, behind Frank Beamer. And he's retiring at the end of the season, because Boosters want him out. And they haven't had a winning season since, I believe, 2011. And he's very fond. I think the Michigan job could be a good spot for him. Unfortunately, there is one thing. He's very fond of... he's overly generous, particularly when it comes to signing people to scholarships.
Oh, yes, yes. He's the one that outdid the SEC with his generosity a few years ago.
Like 300 people in a recruiting class. he's just signing entire battalions. He's just pulling over a cruise ship, signing all of them.
I think this makes him perfect for Michigan.
Well, they do need some players. Larry Blakeney will find them, dang it.
Literally lots of players.
Lots of players. If one doesn't work, you just go get another.
I like the extreme implication that the Big Ten honor code is signing one player for season. Finding the ideal Michigan man and signing him. And then you've got a player.
I've had the same primary care physician for 30 years, and he's been dead for 10.
What a relationship.
A Michigan man. Michigan man catches a cold with honor.
Well, they done caught one for a few years, huh? And got rid of it yet, huh?
Snap!
That old Brady Hoculitis. I made that up myself.
Here's your sign.
It ain't a real disease.
Here's
that was a hell of a blue-collar comedy drop right there.
Finally.
You didn't even go top shelf with the Ron White. No, no.
Nope. That's the well drinks.
Whew, man, right to the Foxworthy, straight out of the bottle. Damn. Jason, I believe you have one more question.
Yes. this is also a Florida question. This comes to us from Al Hex Gould, Oh, I guess it's the Halloween thing they do. Everybody changes their Twitter names to Halloween stuff. Alex Gould 17 on Twitter says, what part of Florida produces the most Florida men? South, Central, North, or Panhandle? You guys are the experts here, but I just want to weigh in real quick. I believe it's the North. I think the South, you're getting into Miami territory. Central is all tourists. Panhandle is the part of Florida that's actually really cool because it's kind of Louisiana. And then the North is the part you don't want to go to.
Brian?
I mostly agree. I think you're probably underselling Central a little bit because outside of the super touristy areas, like, you get Waldo, which just had to shut down its police department.
Impressive.
Because that's a thing that happens.
And by the way, one of multiple police departments that are either going to be shut down or under investigation right now.
Yeah, you also have Polk County and everything that happens in Polk County. So I think maybe on a volume, yeah, you're going to get them mostly from North Florida. But per capita, Central Florida is going to give you some of the, your finer, more small batch Florida men.
I am actually going to go contra, and I am going to defend the South Florida contingent. Because if you meet, I will not speak for the transplant that makes up much of that population. If you go strictly native, you come across people who honestly have that they've missed whole chapters in basic human behavior. Like, just there was a dude I knew from Fort Lauderdale who shot clay pigeons off of the roof of his record shop back when, like he had a music shop and one day decided he wanted to shoot clay pigeons and thought he could just do it. Like, you wonder where libertarianism takes root. South Florida, because they've just never been taught that there's actually other people or a society that you just wouldn't do this.
So, well, is there? Can you prove there is?
Not in South Florida, no. No.
And, but we agree that the Panhandle is last on this list, right?
For deep Florida man behavior.
Florida-ness?
Yeah, because my second is actually like West Central, like Tampa.
Yeah.
Yeah, like North Tampa, up around Lutz. That's when you start getting some like deep Florida man behavior. But like the ultimate Florida man of all time is Mickey Munday, right? Like Florida native who just decided that it was probably a better idea to run drugs than get a job. And still to this day is just like, yeah, I didn't do anything wrong.
See, like, to me, the Panhandle is like, it's like stupid fun behavior. Whereas the quintessential Florida ideal we're looking for here is like it hurts your mind. It's so stupid behavior. Like, how could anyone come up with that idea?
Let's see. Having, okay, this is why I choose South Florida. It's the only place where in a single day I have seen a chemical truck crash, turned right to avoid it, okay? Like a chemical truck crash so large I thought a train had derailed, okay? This is in Martin County, which is just north of Palm Beach, right? So we turn right to avoid it, and I turn right and literally like 90 degrees off the wheel and 100 feet down the road, two cops have their guns out, pulling over someone else in an entirely unrelated incident.
Yeah.
Okay, with a shirtless man who has misspelled tattoos in Gothic ink, like Gothic font across his back.
South Florida is definitely the most like a Grand Theft Auto game. Yeah, where just like, there can't be this much crime going on at once. Oh, yes, there can.
It is a massive multiplayer, whatever, experience. MMO game. Yeah.
It is the massive multiplayer experience that never ends. And unfortunately, you cannot switch characters.
You cannot log out.
You cannot log off.
That's you absolutely can. That's what identity theft is.
That's why it's so popular.
It's the human pay and spray.
That's what Florida is. It's a big human pay and spray with deeply varying results. Results may vary.
Results will vary.
Shit, now I'm the governor. How'd that happen?
Hey, Rick Scott. Okay, due to time constraints, because we really did, I think, a fantastic job on the Florida answer. Great job, y'all.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yay, us. Let's go ahead and look at this week. which is not exactly like the most challenging week in the schedule. Probably not your week six, you know, masterpiece. It's an interim week, but there are a few interesting games of note. For instance, you know, Florida State at Syracuse, just really Florida State's strength of schedule, just doubling down. Every game in the ACC is a fight, and this is a fight. It's not a fair one. It's between a very large man and a very tiny puppy named Syracuse that no one loves.
Puppy is asleep.
The puppy's listen, the puppy has worms.
Listen, man, I know Jim Boeheim's had a few down years, but that program is primed for a bounce back.
Scott Schaefer is so close to being a 90s SNL character. If you watch his press conferences, he's like this close to being like if
Chris, I drive a Dodge Stratus.
He's like somewhere between Chris Farley and Will Ferrell. He's like
my favorite thing he says is he does the thing where he says we're gonna fight our ass off, like the collective singular ass.
Yeah, like
we're gonna fight our asses off.
We're gonna defend.
We're gonna get out there and fight our ass off.
His team is one giant ass, and we're gonna fight.
It's Voltron.
We're gonna fight ass.
Voltron ass.
Ass fight.
He's one of those guys who doesn't actually have, you know, like answers. He's just like, yeah, I don't have another strategy, so we're just gonna do this harder.
We're gonna talk about ass.
I read this in a coaching book 8 years ago.
Oklahoma versus Texas, which, you know, that happens.
Down in the swamp.
That's Dabo Swinney and his boys. And then the air raid down in the swamp.
Firing up the old pistol bone.
A real Red River shootout. Yeah, you watch that game for the B-roll, and then you get to the actual important game in Texas, Baylor-TCU.
Yeah, which I don't know what to make of this just because of, you know, I don't think Baylor's played anyone of note yet. So this could be trouble for Baylor.
It's trouble in both directions. I think both teams have good offenses and good defenses. I think we have, you know, we believe Baylor has a better quarterback, but TCU probably has better defense.
Yeah, and also kind of, I think, like a pretty nasty little budding rivalry between the two schools, you know, in that power vacuum that Texas has sort of left the two of
them. That'd
be
nice, because they kind of don't have anybody else other than, you know, like Texas players talk shit about them and then lose.
This season also feels like Bryce Petty is the bank robber who got shot and has just been hiding his wound the whole time.
Still has two broken bones in his
head. Yeah. So this might be the game where he, like, opens his jacket. We're like, oh, that is a lot of blood.
Yeah. And then, like, the horn frog shoots blood out of its eye. There's already so much blood. It's probably because the only Baylor game that anyone in the country has watched all year was that one early in the season when, like, his back fell apart. And since then, we've just assumed, you know, he's probably fine.
Yeah.
That didn't sound that bad.
Baptist
he broke
medicine.
Some bones I never heard of. How important could they be?
Rub some Dr. Pepper on it. It'll be fine. Auburn at Mississippi State is our large-ish game in the SEC. And there's no reason for me, by the way, to just think that this is like not one of those games where it comes down to whoever has the ball last, because it's Auburn. And that's just the kind of game that they force you in every time. Even if you're Kansas State, you play everything pretty much perfectly against them. They'll still do that.
Yeah, well, they'll find a way to make you just fuck things up, like 20-yard field goals and whatever, like Kansas State did.
Yeah, and Mississippi State, still totally capable of that. I know they're really good right now. Still really, I think they haven't had the game where they make a lot of mistakes yet.
Yeah, they haven't really been challenged yet.
Yeah, they also haven't had that game where they, you know, shoot themselves in the foot in the first or second quarter and then have to recover, which every team has. They just haven't.
And they've also, you know what I just realized? Both the MSUs have fourth quarter disease. If Michigan State and Mississippi State played each other, the whole fourth quarter would just be like just one fumble.
No, you take the ball.
It would just be rugby, just one 15-minute fumble.
There would only be one play in the fourth quarter. Just yakety saxing all over the field. This is also the game day game. So game day will have been in Mississippi for two straight weeks. And as a friend of mine asked, who told Desmond Howard that? Who had the pleasure of being like, hey, Des,
Who had to break the news?
Who had to break the news that they were going to spend two straight weeks in Mississippi? Fuck. Oregon at UCLA.
Pass.
Two one-loss teams. Pretty much like an early Pac-12 elimination game.
Desperate for love.
Desperate two young men. Desperate for love. Each deeply insecure and flawed in their own
One way. Young duck. One young bear.
One young trying to coexist and fighting over one stale Twix. That's these teams right here. Probably watching something else, I'm guessing.
Yeah. But it is kind of amazing that week 7, one of those teams is completely out of the national picture just because both were predicted to do big things. Various people had either one or the other in the playoff, and one of them's gone already.
I think people were looking for a way out of UCLA just because they had displayed some, like, you know, they let Memphis almost win a game on them.
Don't hate on Memphis.
I'm not hating on you. Hey,
man, Justin Fuente might be y'all's next head coach.
Just ask the chili fiends of Cincinnati how that went for them. Got their ass blown out by Memphis.
I mean, Memphis Ribs versus Cincinnati Chili, I literally can't imagine a bigger blowout. That's the greatest food in the world versus the worst.
In so many ways.
Yeah, like farts.
Farts. The game I will be at. It's a night game. Why?
And nobody made you do this. Like, no, this was well, all right, poor idea.
I have to do this for the EDSBS fundraiser. This was like their home schedule.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's
their
right.
home schedule is so bad.
Do you remember this game last year? Like, this game was the dick-trippingest maybe of all year. And these teams are both possibly worse than they were.
Yeah, and I'll be there at bright and early at 7 p.m. It does keep me from watching LSU at Florida, though, so thank God for that.
Yeah, I'm not going to Ann Arbor, and I somehow won't watch it as well. Look at me. I'm next level.
And the dick-trippiness factor, you know, last year this game was a mess, and that was with, like, a former Tom Brady quarterback coach, highly accomplished offensive coordinator type running the show for Penn State. And now Penn State's offense is, hey, we recruit really well.
Hey, we got your guys. We're taking all your guys.
Hey, we recruit like hell, man. What do you do schematically? We recruit.
We're handing the ball off. That's what we're doing. We'll get to the ball.
It's like the playbook is just like recruiting.
It's the pyramid. it's the pyramid scheme offense. It's like,
get
no,
the players in. What are you going to do with them? Get more players.
Now we got more players, and they get two more players, and each one of
them
gets two.
You can only play
more.
11 at a time, so you kind of have to line them up. But
that's just
I don't have time to listen to this. I got to recruit.
That's not what kids want to hear in the living room.
And that's how your program gets investigated by the FBI.
Woo!
Ole Miss at Texas A&M, which I don't think this is a real dangerous game for Ole Miss. It just doesn't feel okay. How's this? In any other universe, it would feel really, really dangerous. I really hope that's not what this Ole Miss team is.
There's one part of it that feels very dangerous.
Dr. Bo.
Yeah, it's Dr. Bo plus at College Station.
Yeah,
that's a big, like, mean, loud place. And
like a pterodactyl could fly away with one of his arms, and the crowd would just cheer.
Since we've already made,
then eat the pterodactyl. Say,
then they'd put that over some slow roasting mesquite coals. Just get seal the flavor in on that pterodactyl wing. If any school would have a pterodactyl, by the way. Texas A&M's a real good bet. Just one of those bats that they mutated, right? Under the wings at Kyle Field.
He just kept feeding him.
Just kept feeding him brisket. Just kept growing, you know? Sometimes you recruit a bat and you get a pterodactyl. Sometimes you get a tight end and he becomes an offensive lineman. It's just
the best part is that pterodactyl would be a regent.
He'd be a regent. He'd be a fascist. He'd be like, healthcare.
Oh yeah, pterodactyls are dicks.
Yeah, serious. Let's see. We've got. By the way, my last note on that is that, like, Bo Wallace didn't throw any picks against Alabama. They're like farts. He's just been holding them in. He's just going to throw two or three against A&M.
I think maybe he took a cleanse against Boise State, and that was what that rush of three of them was. I think he's all cleaned out.
You think a Mississippi resident took a cleanse?
Yeah, just let's move on.
Coleslaw. The Mississippi cleanse is just eating a lot of mayonnaise-y coleslaw.
It's got vegetables in it.
That's my roughage right there. That and Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
I put some River Rock in it, so it really cleans me out.
USC at Arizona.
Gross.
Dangerous game for Arizona, by the way. Like,
what a hilarious thing to say. Dangerous game for Arizona playing USC.
Yep.
They just lost to the quarterback.
I slept through the first 6 weeks. What happened that produced that sentence?
Hello, Rip Van Winkle.
Welcome. Gotta watch out for USC.
Welcome
Arizona.
To a horrifying new reality.
I mean, I think every game is going to be dangerous for Arizona because, let's face it, they are not the number 10 team in the country. I'm about to go on another Cal rant because Cal's 4-1.
Dude, they might be. That's how bad this year is. That's how inconsistent everyone is. By the way, Rip Van Winkle, one thing that always disturbed me, what kind of jacked up country was America when you could sleep out in the woods and be like a creepy bearded old man and nobody did anything? They just stepped over you.
No, you don't. That was back when everyone in America was a threat to kill you. So if somebody was sleeping, you didn't wake them up.
Yeah, you were 1% safer. That was one fewer person who could gut you.
But like Rip Van Winkle leads me to believe that 19th century America, or actually 18th century America, was just woods filled with creepy old men with beards. Like, just
yeah.
Okay.
That's why they were able, the Dutch were able to buy New York for so cheap. They were like, yeah, it's just full of old men sleeping in the woods. We don't want it.
All those sounds men, like you've thought this through.
Yeah. Speaking of creepy old men with beards in the woods, Alabama plays at Arkansas, which is, I think, talking of dangerous games and ominous noise, this won't be fun for Alabama at all. No.
For anybody.
No,
this would be fun for just grinning Brett Bielema watching stuff break.
How many passes will be thrown in this game? I want a prediction from both of you.
Well, but Bama's going to screw that up.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's fine. But like,
they'll screw up the magnificent wonder.
You're also presuming that Nick Saban isn't pissed and isn't like, yeah, sorry,
with,
Lane, I'm shutting
like with
it down.
Lane Kiffin on an actual leash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go 48 with 38 of them by Alabama.
Okay.
I'm gonna go 54 with I think there's gonna be, I'll go 34-20. I think Arkansas passes 20 times.
Wow, letting it loose.
Letting it loose.
Let the thing fly.
A couple little rollouts because they'll come out passing a little bit, loosen them up, and then they'll just drop the hammer.
Okay. All right.
I like that. That's pass to set up the run. That's the Arkansas way.
That's, you know what?
you get the box score formalities out of the way so that you can actually recruit a quarterback, but then you get to the good stuff.
Yeah, we got a balanced offense. We just throw it 20 times.
Yeah, come play for us. Look at this. You'll get to throw the ball 20 times a game all at once.
I hope Brett Bielema like recruits quarterbacks like most people recruit punters. Like, that's what it's like, oh, you want a scholarship?
Yeah. Well, that's what he did at Wisconsin. He just waited for somebody to get booted, and then he'd go bring him on in. The best player he had at Wisconsin was Russell Wilson, who was like a, you know, converted baseball player.
who disappointed Tom O'Brien.
Bielema was basically everybody's rebound coach. I'm so hurt. Hello.
All you do is just wait. Who would recruit a quarterback? I mean, if you look at the five-star quarterbacks from any year of the past 10 years, half of them transfer. Just wait.
There's Brett Bielema just waiting for like a flat screen to fall off the back of a truck.
You know who was recruited? Jeff Driscoll.
No, passionately.
There you go. You know who transferred? Like three really good Florida quarterbacks to the ACC.
Mm-hmm. And Engelbert.
So simple. Also never recruit anyone.
The message is very simple. Don't try, kids. Don't ever try.
Just sit and wait.
Just go to Goodwill. Get you a nice, slightly used quarterback.
I found a Russell Wilson in the dumpster.
He has some puke on him, but he's only $7.
That's why they make soap.
And by that, I mean chili.
Chili.